Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share empowering and positive information. We begin our program with a study from Copenhagen University Hospital, and it talks about how, in this large study, people with low levels of vitamin K have less healthy lungs. Now, you hear about vitamin C and B complex and E and coenzyme Q10. You almost never hear about vitamin K. But this study and others show people with low levels of vitamin K in their blood are more likely to have poor lung function and to suffer with asthma, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, and wheezing, as according to the peer-reviewed journal ERJ Open Research. Now, all of us know that vitamin K is found in leafy green vegetables, cereal grains, whole grains, and it plays an important role in blood clotting, and so helps the body to heal wounds. But research now, they're telling us that it also impacts our lung health, and that's important. It also is important, along with vitamin D3, calcium, magnesium, and manganese, and silica, in creating new bone and keeping you strong, your skeletal structure, as you age, so you don't suffer from osteoporosis. So get your vitamin K1, 2, and 3 each day. Now, from Jilin University in China, calcium supplementation reducing the risk of hypertension disorders of pregnancy and related problems. One of the side effects of pregnancy is hypertension. And one of the reasons, one, there are several, is that people tend to eat very salty diets. You know, you've heard of pregnant women craving pickles. Well, that's actually true. Now, why they're craving it, it may be something as innate as the DNA saying that we need more sodium. Well, according to the news reporting from China, quote, hypertensive disorders of pregnancy are closely related to maternal death and morbidity. Calcium supplementation during pregnancy seems to reduce the risk of hypertension disorders. So, if you're pregnant, please make sure that you get into the hands of a qualified nutritionist, hopefully someone who has a good background in nutritional biochemistry. And by the way, all dietitians have to have a background in nutritional biochemistry, so you understand which nutrients you need and how much of a given nutrient you're absorbing versus how much you're taking. For example, a lot of people have poor digestion, and most people have poor digestion. They don't absorb everything, only a part of it. So just make sure you're not taking the low-end recommendations, because if you add in the way we eat, poor food combining, overeating, filling the stomach way beyond what it should be, and then the dumping, where food is only partially digested, it gets taken out of the stomach into the intestines, where very little is going to be absorbed. So make sure you're getting your calcium. Also, another study, and this one is important because it's giving us an understanding of why in our society, why we should be looking at something that the Aboriginal cultures do, and that is bringing back the afternoon nap. And if you do that, you can help to adapt to extreme heat. Now, this is from Australian National University. Too much air conditioning may be harming our health. That's according to this new study. Well, I'm down here in Florida, where this morning when I went out for a run, and I go early before I tended the animals, and it was about 90 degrees. It's going to get close to 100 today. With it rained already this morning, you're dealing with 100% humidity. So it's like working in a sauna or a steam bath. And I mean, the hair gets frizzy. This is Frizzyville down here. But you know, your body learns to adapt to it. What's not good is when you go from outside, where it's really hot, into a cold environment, like a car, or into your office, and then you go back outside, out and in. Not good. So quite simply, here's what they're saying. Too much air conditioning is harming our health. The study found that despite spending substantially more time spent in air-conditioned space over the past 40 years, people in Australia's Northern Territory have paradoxically become more vulnerable to heat-related deaths. and the research has been published in The Lancet Planetary Health. However, Aboriginal communities in that area are no more vulnerable to heat despite high burdens of chronic illness, extreme socioeconomic and housing inequality, and far less access to air-conditioned spaces. The reason for this apparent discrepancy is, according to the authors, cultural heat avoidant practices as simple as staying out of the hot afternoon sun or taking a siesta, or taking a nap. And by the way, I find this is done all over Western Europe on the Mediterranean. I mean, at noontime there, forget it. You know, you'll see lots of tourists, especially in summertime, but the month of August, all over Europe, Greece, Spain, France, Italy, they take the month off and they go to the beaches, but also they stay in, they don't stay indoors in air condition all day, but they stay out of the direct sun and they take naps, you know, sometimes right at, you know, after they have a meal. Actually, it's not good. You should be going for a walk after meal. So even though the siesta has all but disappeared in places like Spain, the recent extreme weather in Europe might be prompting a comeback. According to the authors of this study, hot climate communities need to start considering the social cultural means of adapting to hotter weather. And we haven't done that yet. Unless you live in a hot area, then you know how to adapt. All right? Hopefully. But air conditioning is not good all the time. Just saying. Now, one of the things that I found an interesting study, this is from Baylor College of Medicine. It's about a nutrient we need for our heart. It's called carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E. If you're deficient in it, it can lead to a mild form of autism. The possibility that a mild form of autism may be linked to carnitine deficiency has been proposed in a new research paper published in BioEssays, confirming the hypothesis could have revolutionary implications for the prevention of certain types of autism. 10 to 20% of cases of autism could be prevented by changes in infant nutrition. That's according to Dr. Arthur Boudet, and the Henry M. Mayer Chair and Professor of Molecular and Human Genetics at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. So think of that. Think of the idea that all the other environmental factors that could impact a child's development, and if we just made sure that L-carnitine was in the mother's diet and then later bring it into the child's diet in the appropriate amount. Results of animal studies and genetic factors observed in autistic patients led the professor to suggest that low brain carnitine levels might help trigger a mild form of autism, which predominantly affects males. And previous research at Baylor College had identified that around 1 in 350 males are unable to produce their own carnitine due to an inactive form of what is called a TMLHE gene. So, but I suggest you take carnitine as an adult, no matter what. Why? Because it helps create energy for the brain and for the heart. Also from the University of British Columbia, research hints a link between babies' microbiome, their bacteria, and brain development. In this exploratory study, levels of certain types of microbes or bacteria in babies' guts were shown to be associated with performance in tests of early cognitive development. Now, there's mounting evidence highlighting numerous ways in which the community of diverse bacteria that naturally reside in a human gut, what is called the microbiome, B-I-O-M-E, is connected to human health, including brain health. And to help deepen understanding of these potential connections, colleagues at the university analyzed data from a group of infants aged 4 to 6 months, and the infants had each completed at least one of these three evaluations of various cognitive abilities, and then they took a look at their gut bacteria, and they found that the infants who succeeded at tests of social attention known as point and gaze which measures the ability to share focus of an object with another person, tend to have higher amounts of microbes in a particular type of bacteria, healthy bacteria. By the way, one of the best bacteria comes from breast milk. So, healthy mother, healthy diet, healthy attitude, healthy bacteria in a healthy child. That's simple. That's it on health and nutrition. We have an unusual program today, something completely different. And we're going to take a break. But let me remind you that we also have coming up this Sunday, the world premiere of my new film over the internet. I don't know if we have any room left. Unfortunately, some people wait too late. As a result, thousands of people can't get in because we rent the bandwidth that they can give us, and that's it. But you can go to GaryNall.com and get more information on it. It's a really upbeat, positive, life-affirming. Wow, if you're depressed, if you're anxious, if you're kind of in a malaise, if you don't know what to do with your life, if you want to repurpose your life, if you want to stop the premature aging, if you want to stop diseases, if you want to improve those conditions, you want to extend your lifespan, all of this now has been scientifically proven. Yes, in the peer review article, which I think has 16 authors on it, and from the top anti-aging institutions in the world. I'll share that article with you when I get a copy. I don't handle any of that. They don't want any bias, so fine. They do all the analysis at the universities and their labs, and then they call me and say, here's what we found, and they found good stuff, and we filmed everything. So you don't want to miss this. And also in here, you have Dr. Peter Resnick, and you have Mitchell Raven. You have people who can inspire you out of your depression and out of your kind of staying on pause instead of living a meaningful and fulfilling life. And we all deserve a meaningful, fulfilling life. I don't deal with politics. I don't deal with agendas or ideologies. No, just good quality information, all grounded in good science. So go to GaryNall.com to get more information on it. If there's, again, I don't know today if there's room or not, but I'm premiering it Sunday at 1 o'clock. We're going to take a break. And by the way, I'm doing today my Classroom on the Air today, which will go over to Gary and All YouTube and Rumble, is about finding real meaning and real purpose in your life, no matter how negative and toxic and dystopian everything seems to be. There's reason for hope. And I explain all about that in my Classroom on the Air today. And there are hundreds of other classrooms on the air, and you can take a look at them. They're free. There's a public service. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We broadcast all over the world, and I try to address the issues each day that you say are important to you. Now, mind you, that means we have a wide spectrum of interest. Young people who are more idealistic, young people who are confused about life at this point, too many crises, not enough preparation, don't know what to do, older people who are kind of sitting it out. Oh, I put in my time, Gary. I don't need to do anything. I worked hard. I was a good person. Never caused a problem. Never got arrested. Blah, blah, blah. And now I'm just going to play golf or maybe tennis or waffle ball, whatever it's called. Okay. And you assume that everything's going to be the same. Why don't you go to Maui, Hawaii today, where the island is burning, 26 people dead. That's rare to have that many people die when you know you have fires everywhere and you don't have the resources to handle it. But yet, a week ago, Maui was just one of the nicest places to live if you didn't pay attention to climate change. You see, every place is good until you look to see, tell me what I'm not saying. I call it, listen carefully, I think this is important, I call this phenomena the dead horse syndrome. What do I mean? Okay, you walk by something. You should stop. It doesn't work. It's not right. It shouldn't be there. It's a mess. And you should clean it up. But you don't. Even in your own home, right? Closets are stuffed, basements that are moldy and got radon in them, garages that are just overloaded, attics. Well, forget the attics. And you think, I'll get to it, but you don't, just like your health. I'll get to it, but you don't. You always assume you have time. Well, the Buddha said, you think you have time, you don't. So the people of Maui today are realizing, historically, yes, it was a great place to live, nice people, wonderful weather, and who it wasn't. Why are we always in America? Always. I mean, without exception. There is no exception. We never prepare for anything. We don't prepare for death, old age. We don't prepare for divorce. We don't prepare for separation of jobs, being thrown out even if we have seniority. Never thought that would happen. In fact, if anything, the longer we stay in a company, the more significant we become. Because go to Karen. She can do anything. Go to Lynn over there. She can do it blindfolded. Bob, no problem. Okay. They were loyal. They mastered their job. They can do it with ease. They set everyone kind of straight when it comes to how to do something, do it right, until they're no longer needed because automation, artificial intelligence has replaced them. What does that tell us about corporate America's interest? Whose interest are they serving? Always their own, not yours. If American corporations served your interest, we wouldn't have all this plastic, because we wouldn't be over-plasticizing everything. We wouldn't have unhealthy food. We wouldn't have liquor stores allowed to be staying open because they're essential. Absolutely let every liquor store stay open because clearly the virus wouldn't go into it. Oh, and your big box stores, let's keep them open too, because clearly standing in line 2,000 people in a Walmart or a Whole Foods, that's perfectly acceptable. By the way, stay on their little circles. What's the science? There is no science behind it. We found that out. But stay there anyhow. Kind of go through the fake rituals of life that are meaningless. If we took away everything in our lives that we shouldn't have, shouldn't experience, because it's deadly, destructive, we'd have a much different life. Why don't we want to get back to that, where life was simpler, less complex, easier to understand, where you could actually trust politicians? They actually cared about you at one time. Some did in American history. But then along came in the 1960s some people who had a voice that we had not had before. We had had voices, absolutely. And some went to prison. The great socialist, Debs, went to prison because of his truth and honesty. But nobody knows who he is today unless you're old enough to remember, and then you say, so what? Let's play a clip. Here is someone that you all should know about. You should have read his writings, especially his latest writing, the last before he died. He had really come full circle. Malcolm X. Listen carefully what he said about the Democratic Party at that time. And answer this, please. Do you feel that he was correct or incorrect jumping all these decades ahead to the Democratic Party today? Here's Malcolm X.
Gary, we don't have that clip. Can you set up to a different one?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just got word that they don't have that one. We'll get that one ready in a few moments before the end of the show. I want you to hear it. My goodness, it's prescient. And now let's hear from a very, very insightful Vandana Shiva, part three of her talk with Russell Brand.
So the issue of hunger today and the issue of price today has to be seen through the lens of the fact that there's structural systems to deny people their right to food. And the denial begins with the denying them the right to produce food in a way that they can access their own production. But the second very big issue is this entire industrial globalized food system is supported by stealing our tax money. It cannot run on its own without subsidies. $400 billion a year, more than a billion a day, is what's taken from our pockets, given to the corporations, to take high-cost production and make it look cheap.
Yeah.
And so industrial globalized food looks cheap, even though it's much more costly to produce. I mean, how can it be that a food produced by a patented seed that is used Roundup and all kinds of chemicals, and by the time it becomes processed, it becomes cheaper food? Because the costs are not internalized.
Yeah.
They're externalized to nature and society. So the where do we begin by correcting what I've called it the nutritional apartheid? You know, like apartheid is separation. I mean, separateness is the Afrikaans word. And I call it ecological apartheid when we pretend we are separate from nature. And it's nutritional apartheid when we divide society up to deny large numbers their right to eat healthy food. Because food is not a commodity, as you said. Food is us. It becomes us. And the longer you eat processed junk food, the sicker you will be. So during COVID, most of the people who died didn't die because a little virus gave them an infection. The virus didn't kill them. What killed them was the diseases of bad food. 9.6% higher risk with diabetes, 7.6% higher risk with cancer, both of which linked to a food system. So I think what we have to do is a multi-layered movement. First, begin with changing the system where you are. You know, protect the farmers, create markets, do the direct links, stop, you know, break the separation. Because community building, to me, is we've been made separate from each other. And all we have to do is allow the flows between each other to rebuild community. And food is a very good place to start because it's real and you need it. So, you know, begin with local food community and whatever you can do with your means. Now, most places where I know farmers markets have been created or the CSAs have been created, people have done it with their own initiative. They've done it to civil society. Some places they've been able to go to regional level, local town level. Some places they've been able to go to country level. I just gave an award to Denmark. Denmark procures all the food for schools and hospitals from organic farms.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah? So that's where you make the shift. But I think we absolutely need a rebellion against our taxes being stolen from us without our permission and being used to finance systems that are destroying the earth and destroying our health. And when we see the full connections, that movement will be easy. Remember the U.S. freedom began with saying no taxation without representation. Yes. Now we should say no stealing our taxes without our permission.
This is a very unifying idea. Of course, I'm sat here as an English person, and all these revolutions, like, we had to kick some people out of India. Yeah, no, I can't remember who that was. Then there was the American Revolution. I don't know what was going on there. We're simply trying to help everyone. Vandana, it's sort of hidden in plain sight that food is sacred, not least in the word festival that is surely connected to the word feast. Most religious practices honor the process of eating your grandmother's food, your community dish, your national vegetable, the continuing instantiation of meaning connected to food, meaning that perhaps might fill this spiritual void, this emptiness to which you referred, in the same way that substantive food might provide us with succor and nutrition anatomically and biochemically. It's interesting for you to hear you, Vandana, describe how the relationship between the farmers and the earth and the farmers and the rest of us and our obligation, in a sense, to become farmers is. Curious I am also that when we hear the global farming movement, well, let me say, there are global farming protests in Sri Lanka and in India and in Germany and in England and in the Netherlands, because it seems as if there is one central movement that is impacting and infecting people from, let me use this word, diverse communities of multi-races. And yet much of the rhetoric that is used to dismiss, disparage, smear and attack them relates to fascism and being right-wing. Why is there such a conscious and deliberate effort to divide people along these lines? Why in particular is this movement around food autonomy and community autonomy being targeted so aggressively? And how might we reverse and neuter some of these arguments? Because I've been called a right-wing fascist and conspiracy theorist. It really hurt my feelings. What are we going to do?
So three quick issues. The first is that, you know, we have to create another narrative. You know, we have to create a narrative that brings together the sacredness of food, the vitality of food to our health and well-being, both mental and physical, and the fact that food has been a destructive force under the industrial globalized system, but food is a regenerative force in any system that works for the earth and works in service for the earth and works in care for the earth. Food is a byproduct of love and care for the earth.
Wow.
Yeah?
I heard that about pleasure. Like, pleasure is meant to be a byproduct of doing stuff, not the end point. It helped me with addiction. So food is a byproduct of doing the right thing.
And by the way, on the issue of, you know, spirituality and the material, I think it was already a strange division. But now even the materialism is being hijacked, because the last time I was in FAO, they were talking about dematerializing the seed and food.
What is FAO?
FAO is the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations that takes care of the food. Anyway, what they call dematerialization is not the seed will disappear. No. It just means Mr. Gates will take a genomic map, a digital map, and take a patent of it. He'll still own the seed, and the same is happening with land. You know, they keep telling people, telling farmers, leave the land. If you don't do it on your own, we'll force you off the land. You know, this is happening in every, it's happening in this country, it's happening in Netherlands, it's happening in India, everywhere, farmers, leave the land, leave the land, leave the land. Agriculture is a primitive occupation. You know, growing food is obsolete. And each of these billionaires is buying the land. So they're using dematerialization as the new trick of taking away the gifts of the earth. And, you know, they took the seed, now they already took the land, but now they want to take it all over again. The issue of labeling as fascism those who challenge fascism is a typical trick of doublespeak. You know, remember? 1984? It's 1924. And I wrote, you know, when the junk food industry was trying to rewrite our laws on food safety, food and health safety, I wrote a very quick briefing paper for our parliament. And it's called Food Fascism. And I said, stop this food fascism. So when your seed is controlled by Monsanto, your trade is controlled, your chicken are controlled by Cargill, your junk food and therefore you're creating disease is controlled by Coke, Pepsi, Nestle, all of this is a system of food fascism. And then the next step of Silicon Valley and the techno billionaires wanting to invest in fake food, so that not only do you have one patent on a seed, now you have 14 patents on an Impossible Burger. On every fake food, there are hundreds of patents because every synthetic artificial element has a patent behind it. Can you imagine if they hold the whole world to shift to fake food, how much royalty collection they'll have? That's what they are looking at.
The other piece is important too, and that is that as Joe Rogan schooled a CNN person about January 6th. Now what's important is what really happened on January 6th. I've done no programs on it. And it clearly, by any indication, it was not insurrection. There were no army militias going in there and trying to take over and hold hostage. But they made it into that so they could hold power and make accusations. Some of the people who were very stupid, well, you know, you do something stupid and you break into some place, break windows, you're going to be held accountable. But here's the part that is important. Why is it that the moment the FBI is brought into the situation and that they were working undercover, that they had undercover agents there, as did all the other agencies, why is it that's not mentioned once? And then this man can't wrap his mind around the fact that the FBI would do something like this. They just wouldn't. Really? Okay, let's give you an example. Play the clip, and then let's hear what Richard Gill has to say, because he has specific information on this.
So Joe Rogan had on the comedian Jim Gaffigan on Friday night, on his Friday night program. We were going to talk about this last night. We ran out of time, so we do want to show it to you now. In which Rogan tries to say he believes, with pretty good reason, that the FBI had some role to play in the events of January 6th. And there's no doubt that they had some role to play. And we're going to show you the reports from places, even like the New York Times, that admit that they did. But I want you to see the reaction of Jim Gaffigan, who believes he's this very informed and good-natured American liberal who clearly has been feeding on CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times. You can tell by everything he says. And he's aghast at the suggestion that the U.S. security state would ever do anything like try and take a peaceful protest at the January 6th Capitol and make it a little bit more violent in order to blame Trump for it, in order to render Trump a criminal, in order to claim there's an insurrectionary movement in the United States that requires extreme powers in the hands of the FBI to combat. So I found this discussion extremely informative, particularly because of the reaction of Gaffigan. So let's watch some of this.
I think the January 6th thing is pretty bad.
Well, the January 6th thing is bad, but also the intelligence agencies were involved in provoking people to go into the Capitol building. That's a fact.
Wait a minute. You're saying that that guy, what's his name?
Ray Epps.
Yeah, you really think that he
was... I don't know, but I do know that every other...
I think that's pretty apparent. I think he's going to sue Fox.
I think every other person who was involved in January 6th, who was involved in coordinating a break-in into the Capitol and in instigating people breaking, they all were all arrested. This guy wasn't. Not only that, they were defending him in the New York Times, the Washington Post, all those different things, because saying that Fox News is unjustly accused him of instigating. Well, he clearly instigated. He did it on camera. I don't know if he was a Fed. I know a lot of people think he was a Fed. The people that were there were calling him a Fed. What I do know is when they asked the FBI said, we can't tell you whether or not there were people that were there that were doing that. Now, there's been reports that there was hundreds of agents that were there that were doing that. I don't know if that's true either. But I do know that they do use agent provocateurs to disrupt peaceful protests. It's a common tactic. What they do is, say if there's a, like the World Trade Organization is a great example. And that was in, I think, the 90s in Seattle. And so what they did was they were protesting the World Trade Organization. They were doing it peacefully. It was a big problem. So what they did is they sent in, allegedly, agent provocateurs. They started smashing buildings and lighting things on fire. Now it's not a peaceful protest. Now they can bring in the police. Now they can start arresting people. And then they created a no-protest zone where literally if you had a pin on your jacket that was the WTO with a red line through it, they would not let you cross. You could not cross with a pin that was against the WTO and go to work. It was a no-protest zone. So they silenced protest, which is a part of our freedom of speech. So this is a tactic that some government agencies use to stop peaceful protests.
All right, so what you're saying is on January 6th.
So Joe Rogan just sat there and spent 3 minutes correctly, and I mean only partially, explaining what the FBI has been doing in this country for decades. They infiltrate groups they regard as anti-establishment or in some other way threatening. And they use agent provocateurs. They purposely try and persuade people who are otherwise peaceful to commit violence in order to malign and demean those groups, to turn them into violent groups that they can then arrest, even though their original interest in them is their political views, or to claim that there's a much greater threat of violent extremism in the United States, so that people turn to the FBI and give the FBI more powers in the name of being protected. Wanting to be protected is a natural human instinct. If you can scare the population into believing that there's all these different groups out there committing violence in the name of their political agenda, people will say, please, FBI, do whatever you have to, save us. And one way they accomplish that is by infiltrating these groups, which we know they have done. There has been ample reporting on it. I've done a lot of the reporting. And they implant people in these groups who they control, often people who they catch in other crimes and who are desperate to avoid prison and are willing to serve the FBI however they can in order to stay out of prison. And these are unscrupulous people. These are career criminals who know that they have...
Okay. So there's Glenn Greenwald, a really outstanding Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. He was the one who gave us the truth on Edward Snowden. And he had enough integrity that he left The Intercept rather than to be compromised on any level. Richard Gale, you've done a lot of research on this. Please share your findings.
Yes, Gary. I think we should start with ContelPro. I mean, I'm certain most of the listeners have heard of ContelPro, but this was a program that was done as cooperation through the FBI and CIA. And although we can, as the what we just listened to with Glenn Greenwald and with Joe Rogan was kind of singling out the FBI, we need to understand that the CIA and the FBI, certainly since the late 1960s, have been kind of working hand-to-hand together in infiltration and surveillance. But ContelPro was a much, much larger operation than most people realize. It was, although it was primarily spearheaded through the FBI, and this was, it went on from the 1950s and pretty much through the 70s to survey and to infiltrate various civil rights groups. It was involved in different covert illegal activities, and not only involved in surveillance and infiltration, but also the planning of disinformation and other kind of tactics to disrupt and neutralize various organizations and individuals. Martin Luther King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, you know, during the civil rights movement, they were targeted. The FBI used agents to infiltrate the SCLC and stir up dissent using different disruptive tactics and undermine the civil rights movement. It was the Black Panther Party was thoroughly infiltrated. They did have these inside informers, FBI. There was a Richard Aoki and William O'Neill, all the anti-Vietnam war groups, SDS, the Vietnam Veterans Against War, the Quakers, of course, because they were notorious conscientious objectors, along with the War Resisters League that were helping draft dodgers to escape to Canada. And they targeted individuals. You remember pediatrician Dr. Benjamin Spock, there's David Dellinger, the pastor of Chicago 7, Rabbi Michael Lerner with the Seattle group, even John Lennon, he was targeted by ContelPro for deportation, and because of Nixon. Nixon was greatly worried about Lennon's possible impact on the 1972 elections, because if you remember Lennon's song making a reference to Tricky Dicky. Attorney William Kunstler, many of the SDS leaders. In fact, it came out later that Mark Rudd, who was one of the major student activists during Vietnam, I mean, it was later revealed that he was an FBI informer. The American Indian Movement, that was completely targeted and infiltrated by ContelPro. Leonard Peltier and Russell Means, you know, with the Wounded Knee standoff at Pine Ridge Reservation, the Puerto Rican Independence Movement. There was the Young Lords, you may remember that, the Women's Liberation Movement that was trying to, they were being monitored. There was the environmental anti-nuclear groups, you may remember those, like the Catholic nuns and priests who were protesting environmental degradation and nuclear proliferation. There was such as the Ground Zero Center. There was the Rocky Flats Truth movement, Greenpeace, Silent Spring. Rachel Carson's group was also infiltrated by the FBI and the Chicano movement with Cesar Chavez. And another one I'd like to bring up, Gary, was Operation Chaos, which a lot of people don't realize. Again, this was FBI, but also a little bit more with CIA intelligence. And this was an effort. It was Richard Helms, who was then the CIA director,
He started this in 1967, but it really needed this FBI's domestic network to get this kind of operative. And then it lasted until 1974. And what this really was an effort to infiltrate all the various organizations and infiltrate, the gatherings, the protests, rallies, different kinds of meetings, gain access to information. But basically to plant a lot of information that could be used to charge these groups with working with the Soviet Union and the Soviet Union. So it was kind of like a predecessor of what we saw with Russiagate. And now, even now, anything that anybody who states anything against the government is connected with Russia. I mean, you may have seen something recently where even Code Pink now is being associated with having being tied with Russia. There was the case Mark Felt, who was better known as Deep Throat. You know, he was an associate director of the FBI. But this secretly providing all this information to Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who led to the investigation of the Watergate scandal. The Democrat Convention in Chicago was fully infiltrated by FBI provocateurs, 1968 as well as the 2008 Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. There was the provocateur Brandon Darby, who was there to stir up violence. And those are a couple of the this has been going on for decades now. And so there's nothing new. And when you and I were speaking about this earlier, it's really just that they become more sophisticated compared to the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And of course, with technology and surveillance and the internet and all. So it's just much more sophisticated than it was back then.
Also remember, Martin Luther King had mistresses around the country. Okay, that was his downside. But the FBI wiretapped the rooms that he was in, then set up a special group through letters and other communications, try to get him to commit suicide. Do the right thing. Don't embarrass yourself. Leave a good legacy. Commit suicide. And yet they were never held accountable for that. In fact, no one's ever held accountable with the CIA for all the mass murders and genocide, regime changes. No one's ever held accountable at the CDC, the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service. None of the federal agencies act as if they have any responsibility to do anything that's ethical or moral or even legal. To the contrary, every single thing they've done that has been historically shown to be a crime, they've walked away from. Now, I'm just saying this is because we have allowed them, the politicians have allowed them, because the politicians are also responsible. Think of it this way. We have a Senate Intelligence Committee that meets with the Director of Intelligence that oversees all the other agencies, CIA, etc. And we have the same thing in the House. Can you remember one single time in its entire history that all of the people on these committees who are getting intelligence information directly, therefore they can challenge them, they can try to stop them, they can defund them, never once have they spoken up? So in my opinion, Congress is corrupt. It's a cesspool of self-interest. It has never once shown us that these people were committing crimes, yet they knew they were committing crimes, and they chose not to do anything because they're afraid of them, because these people are lawless, rogue states. That's what they are. And therefore, the average journalist doesn't want to go against them, because all it takes is one phone call from one of the top major players, and your career is over. They can rewrite your history. They can erase you. And they engage in lies all the time. Richard, thank you very much for being on and sharing that information with us. And that merely corroborates what Glenn Greenwald was suggesting and stating, and Joe Rogan was stating, all to the complete befuddlement of this clueless person who you see all the time on CNN and other networks. We're going to end our segment today for BAI, which they're going to news, but now we found our clip. Malcolm X talking about the Democratic Party way back in the 1960s. Here's what he had to say.
Anytime you throw your weight behind a political party that controls two-thirds of the government, and that
Democrats.
Party can't keep the promise that it made to you during election time, and you are dumb enough to walk around continuing to identify yourself with
Democrats.
That party, you are not only a chump, but you're a traitor to your race.
Malcolm X said it, not me. I'm just saying.
You heard what he had to say. He was right. What do people stand for? What do your party stand for? When I came to New York City, I came as an activist. I was there at Columbia University. I was there at the protests. I wrote the literature. I made posters. Everything has changed. The people have changed. The parties have changed. They're all corrupt now. So we have to start taking back power because these people will never surrender it. All right? So we're going to say goodbye to BAI, and we're going right over now, PRN.live. A few announcements. First off, this coming Sunday, if there's room, and I don't know if there's still room, we will have the world premiere of my new documentary. And the new documentary is really upbeat. It's positive. It's life-affirming. In fact, if anything, you get to see individuals who have changed their lives for the better. It's really good. So I want you to be able to see this. See some of the people you have not heard before, like, we have Mitchell Ravens in there. We have John C. We have a whole group, and Peter Resnick, phenomenal speaker, talking about depression and anxiety and loneliness and fear and insecurity with good solutions. So we want you to be able to turn your life around, no matter what the circumstances you're facing. Remember, go over to Gary Nall YouTube, because today I did a special report on just finding meaning and purpose that's uniquely your own to guide you through your life and to succeed at that. Right? It's important. But this special is going to be a little over 2 hours long. It'll be there. Now, I have one woman who is at a retreat, and we're going to play that. We didn't get to her yesterday. We got to one woman yesterday. But let me mention this. A lot of people have had things change because of being there for the better. And I don't want people coming thinking, well, I'm going to call Luem. I got someone who's sick, and they'll go there and get healed. I do not do that. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to understand how we get sick, why we get sick, and how to stay well and even maximize wellness. There's a lot of power in that. A lot of things can happen and do. And we have Luem standing by. We're going to go to Luem after we hear this clip from this woman. From yesterday. You didn't hear yesterday. I didn't have time to get her on yesterday. Let's go to the clip, please.
I was in Dallas, Texas last week with the program of relief. I enjoyed myself very much. I was not aware of the relief that I was going to receive. Gary was not aware of anything concerning my sickness or my illness. When I went there, the energy, the walking, communicating with other people, it just helped so much. The exercise, the yoga classes, everything was just perfect for me and for other people. It was amazing how people just was so in thrill with what was happening. Nobody knew nothing. We just went there to enjoy ourselves, but it was a miracle how things happened. As for me, my last day there, taking a shower, I had a lump under my arm. I never expressed it to anyone. And I'm taking a shower, and I'm feeling under my arm, I'm not feeling anything. I said, maybe this is not right. So I went and I put more soap and I'm washing again. And when I finished, I just laid down across the bed and I just started thanking God for what had happened. Only God knows what happened. No one else knows. I never expressed it to anyone, my condition. No one. But I was so grateful to have had the opportunity to go there and see what was happening. The energy, so much energy, birds, oh, the air, the water. It was just amazing. And I advise anyone who can afford to go, go. The green tea, everything, the red stuff, it was really intriguing. I appreciate it, and I'm thankful. I am planning to go back again in August. Thank you so much, okay. Gary.
All right. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to come, if you'd like to see the webinar, the premiere of my new film, very upbeat, very positive. For those of you who are confused about life, your aging, your loneliness, your sicknesses, your illnesses, your depression, all of that is covered and showing you how you can go from a negative to a positive, from prematurely aging to reversing aging, all fully documented, as you will see. Call this number if you would like to be a part of the program on Sunday. Call 877-627-5065. I don't know if there's room still available, but call 877-627-5065 or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet Monday through Saturday, noon to 8 at 646-926-5430. Luann's on the phone. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Hi, everyone. Yeah, we still have a couple of spots open. And, you know, a lot of people were asking me about the intentional community, and we were building that intentional community. And, you know, people come down with great intention, but then they end up being, it's the wrong time for them, and they're the wrong energy. And now we happen to have that synergy, that magic of staff that is just pulled together, and they are just creating amazing things. So even though that woman felt the energy was great, imagine it times 10 now, because things are shaping up beautifully. We have some new lectures, new presentations. And then we have other people that have been there, like Elaine doing her art classes, and we have Summer doing her yoga classes. It's going to be just terrific. And I do have some spots opening, but I am filling up. So if you're interested, please give me a call. This is the time to do it. I'm at 903-881-7008. That's 903-881-7008. Give me a call.
Thank you. And we're out of time, everyone. So we're going to say goodbye and stay tuned. We have power programming starting in just a minute. And Utrecht Lee will be back tonight live at 5 o'clock. And she's making major progress. So I think you'll want to enjoy hearing her. Have a nice day, everyone.